You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 79 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I am delighted to welcome Libby to the podcast. Libby, welcome.
Hello.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, we are going to talk about your daughter who has Hirschsprung's disease.
Yeah.
And with no, again, like a lot of people I meet, with no family history, family connection to Hirschsprung's or GI disorders or anything like that.
Yeah.
I guess, would you like to take us from the very beginning?
Yeah, so I got pregnant with Darla and I had a bit of a rough pregnancy. I had hyperemesis, which is where you vomit a lot of times through the day. So it was already a rough start and I didn't eat for a while. So my worry was that she was going to be premature. And then we got to near the end and I had another thing called cholestasis, which is to do with your liver function when you're pregnant. So I had worries anyway about when she would be born. And then I got induced about 3 weeks early. She come out perfectly fine. She actually come out not premature. She was a perfect weight. She was 6'4" and she was just perfectly fine. And then when we got put on the ward, I just noticed this green stuff that she was spitting up and it looked like phlegm from an adult, which is obviously strange. So I kept asking the midwives and I'm very persistent. Like, I'm not shy. I will go at them. And I said, what is this? And they kept saying, it's amniotic fluid. Then another nurse told me that it was just like build up of fluid from in her lungs when she'd been in the womb. And I didn't believe it. So in the end, they sent us home after. She was born on the Friday and we got sent home Saturday morning. And I had a terrible labour anyway. So I was already in a wheelchair because I couldn't walk after the labour. And the day we got home, the Saturday, she still had not drank a bottle at all. She had not passed a bowel movement since she'd been born. So they should not have discharged us whatsoever. And then when we got home, I was so paranoid I couldn't sleep because I thought, I've had another child before. I know that this is not normal, that she's not drinking at all. And then I was trying to convince myself, maybe she's just a tired baby. You know, the labour was a bit traumatic. Maybe she's just exhausted. I was trying to convince myself anyway. I knew deep down I was wrong. And then I didn't know that they did this anymore, but we had a midwife turn up on our door and she literally saved her life. And this midwife came and I'll never forget her. She was the loveliest woman ever. And she came in and I had kept the blanket that she kept throwing the green stuff up on. And I showed it to the midwife and I said, she's still not drinking. She's not had a bowel movement. And this is what is coming up. And she said, go to Alder Egg, like now. So we went straight to Alder Egg and they just rushed us straight in. Now, I thought they're being cautious because she's a baby. But as we've got rushed in, all the surgeons were already there. So it was like they already had an idea from what I'd told them, like over the phone sort of thing. And they put an NG tube straight in to find out what the green stuff was coming out. And the bag fills up full within 5 minutes of like green bile sort of, which was basically the obstruction. Anything that was going in was coming back up from a bowel. So the surgeon basically, he had a rough idea and he said, you know, I think she's got a bowel obstruction. We think it could be something called Hirschsprung's disease. So I'm like, I couldn't even spell it. My head was just gone. And then when we'd had a look online, I was like, it's that. And I knew it was. I said to my mum and my sister, I said, it's that. And he was like, no, just can't. It might not be. And I said, it is that. I know it is. And he said, the only way for us to really find out is to operate. So we'll do open bowel surgery and we'll be able to have a look and see ourselves what it is. So they did that anyway in there and then he put the soma in because she had the obstruction and he knew what it was. So now at this point, he didn't remove any other bowel. because they'd done biopsies and stuff, and they wanted to see how bad the Hirschsprung's was. So they'd done the biopsies and they put the stoma in. Now, when she got back from the surgery, I was so, like, befuddled. I didn't even know what was going on. Like, I'm delirious from the pain medication from labour. And I didn't even know that they put the stoma in. They did tell me, but, like, I was that all over the place. When they brought it back, I've seen this thing on her belly. So I've just went to move it, like a piece of tissue, and I moved it and it was a stoma. And I was like, oh my God, what is that? I didn't know what it was. And I was crying and everything. And then, yeah, that's when she got the stoma. And then the biopsies came back that she had long segments, which is, I think there's 4 nerves in the bowel, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's around 4 major nerves in the bowel that you need to push things through.
Yeah.
It's roughly about that.
Yeah.
And basically, like, 3 of hers was non-working.
Yeah.
So it was very rare chance that she could cope without a stoma. And then I'm trying to think what happened from there. Basically, the stoma trained us in the hospital and stuff, and I got really overwhelmed. And the first 2 days, I couldn't do it. I was saying to them, I can't do it. Like, I don't understand it. I'd never seen anything like it. And they were saying, we can't let you go home until you've done it. So I had to learn it, and I'm like a pro at it now, but at the time it was just terrifying.
Yeah.
And then we got discharged, and then that was literally the only thing about Hirschsprung's we ever got spoke to about.
Wow. So yeah. That's quite a whirlwind first week or so, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I have so much respect for mothers and parents who you go in to labor and you expect, you know, things to be totally normal, and then within a week you are an expert in stoma care.
It's bizarre. It is
unbelievable.
It was a lot, yeah. And because usually when your baby's born, that first week is like the best, because you're in like a bubble and it's all just exciting and new. And that week was probably, I'd say, the most traumatic week in my life that I've ever been through, as well as to the fact that I couldn't even walk, and like I was in a wheelchair. So it was just, I was getting pushed around all day in a wheelchair. People thought I was the patient because I was in a wheelchair. It was so strange. Now I think back to it, it's like my brain has cut off some of the bad bits so that I don't remember. If like that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a trauma response.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Your brain will, yeah, not that I'm an expert in this at all, but your brain will cut off certain bits that are incredibly
dramatic. Because some of it is blurry. I just remember like the important details, but then the bits in between, like the recovery from the surgery, I was on edge. That machine that was beeping is still engraved in my brain.
Yeah. And then there might well be, you know, things that I've seen, I've heard happen to other people where you will completely forget about something for years and years and years, and then there'll be something that triggers it off, and you'll remember it really, really clearly. So those bits that are quite fuzzy at the moment might end up just being really, really clear.
Yeah.
Just, and it could be the simplest thing that triggers that off.
The beeping. Yeah. So anytime we go to hospital now, which obviously can be quite frequent, I'm okay-ish until I hear that beeping, and then it's like my body goes into fight or flight and I start shaking.
Yeah.
And I start sweating and I have like panic attacks over that noise.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes absolute sense. But I can't imagine you'd watch many episodes of Casualty or Holby City.
No way. I would watch anything health related now. I'm terrified.
No, I don't blame you at all. I don't blame you. The one thing that does really surprise me is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but the birth wasn't at Alder Hey, it was at another hospital.
Yeah.
And they discharged you without the bowel movement, with everyone knew at the time, but the green bile being thrown up as well.
Yeah.
I'm amazed they were allowed to do that. Did they explain, or did you ask them why, sort of after everything had sort of settled down a little bit?
So what happened was, when we originally got it all today, you know the way wards have like ward sisters, and I don't want to say the wrong word, but like that, they're high up basically, aren't they? And we had one come to see us, like a very senior high person in Alderay. And she said, can I see the red book? Now, the red book is where they check the stuff off. And she said, I'm ringing them. And she was furious. And she basically rang the women's hospital herself and was like, you know, a baby's nearly lost their life because you didn't do the, like, correct checks. Like, it's a duty of care that is a fail. And I was just in so much shock at the time that I couldn't even, like, comprehend what had happened. And then I'd say about 2 months later, I did go down the legal route of medical negligence. And I basically, every solicitor I went to said the same thing. It's true, but it's frustrating. Basically, because no matter what would have happened, she had this disease regardless. Because they haven't caused her to have it, they can get away with it, basically. But whereas if she did lose her life, thank God she never, then something would only get done about it. But why does it take a baby to lose their life for something to be done? This could happen to someone else where someone else isn't as paranoid as me and they don't go to the hospital over the same thing I did and their baby does have a bowel obstruction and passes away. They should be held accountable. And I did put a formal complaint in and they wanted me to go in that hospital to discuss it. But my trauma is based around my labour and what happened afterwards. And I will never in my life step foot in that hospital ever again in my life. Yeah. Alderay is different because they saved it and they're an amazing hospital. But the women's hospital where I will never step foot in a hospital ever again in my life. And I will never have more children after what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't blame you. It's so frustrating that the legal system is effectively against you, or certainly.
And there's a lot of mums who I know have been in not similar situations but worse, where their baby has passed away in the hospital due to their negligence, and nothing can get done about it because the NHS is just like underfunded and understaffed and all that. Which, so at the end of the day, whose fault is it? Because you can't blame the actual nurses in that moment because they're doing what they're advised to do, which obviously is not a lot because they haven't got the funding for a lot, but at the same time, doing the proper checks, it doesn't cost any money to check a baby's bowel properly. It doesn't cost anything. It takes an extra another 5 minutes out of your day. If they would have felt her bowel, they would have felt how distended it was and how swollen it was, and they was new there, and then that something was wrong, and we could have got transferred straight from the women's hospital to Alderay, where instead they've sent us home. And that one night we had at home was so risky, and it was very lucky that she survived that one night.
Yeah.
Before us getting to that hospital.
Yeah, most definitely. And I just think that's, again, 4,999 out of the 5,000 babies that are born,
yeah,
you know, will pass meconium. Yeah, you won't worry about it. They will pass. But it's that 1 in 5,000that, or you know, there or thereabouts.
And they actually marked down that she did pass that. So that's the bowel movement, isn't it? Like, they put down that she passed that. And when I got home and I checked in, and I told the midwife who came to the house, I said, she has not passed that. And she said, you need to go. Like, right now, they should never have let you leave.
No, and thankfully, the midwife knew that. Because again, like you said, if the midwife hadn't turned up,
I possibly would have left her.
Yeah.
And it would have been disastrous. And that midwife genuinely saved their life. And that midwife also does a clinic in Alderay, so we do still see her sometimes. And I took her flowers and stuff afterwards, because if she genuinely never turns up, and I didn't even know that she was coming, so she never turned up, or we weren't home.
Wow.
You never know what could have happened.
Well, yeah, dread to think. But
yeah,
it's just, it is negligence, and it is.
It is definitely, yeah.
Like some sort of apology, because obviously it's cut and dry as far as I see it. It's, you know, they were supposed to do X, they didn't do X. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's there in you know, in black and white.
Yeah,
and so they wanted you to discuss it. Then
yeah, so like they basically wouldn't move forward with the complaint unless I went in and formally spoke to them, which I'm not comfortable doing. So I went. A lot of my trauma is based around what you did or didn't do. And I don't feel comfortable going in there and hearing an apology, that just doesn't really mean anything, because you're probably going to do it to other mums in the future, because they get you in, have your baby, and they rush you back out. There's not enough aftercare, not even what she had when she was born. I was severely neglected after my labour when I did get checked. I had something called an episiostomy, where they have to basically have to slice you to help forceps, and they sliced my leg without informing me. And when I seen that midwife, she checked me over, and there was a big slice on my leg, and that was the reason I couldn't walk, because it was an open wound rubbing on my other leg. And I put another complaint in about that, and I thought I couldn't walk just because of the labour, and it was because of that cut.
No.
And I also put that in the complaint. No apology, nothing.
It's
horrendous, yeah.
That's awful. Yeah, I mean, there's no other word.
It was really
no other word for it. That is, so not only did they not check for Hirschsprungs,
they didn't even
check. Also just...
And they never discharged me with any pain medication. My mum actually had to ring them the next day and say, you're discharged with nothing. No painkillers. They told me to take paracetamol.
Oh, for a sliced leg.
Yeah, bad. It was. That's why I will never have any more children. And if I did, I would not go to the hospital.
No. And fortunately, you are near a hospital that I speak to a lot of people that are at Alderhay, and they constantly tell me how good it is. And I know it's Hirschsprung's specialist site.
Yeah, which is lucky for us, because like we live so close to them, and like if we lived in a different place and we went to a different hospital and they didn't know about Hirschsprung's disease, it could have gone missed again. Whereas we were so lucky that we had Mr. Taylor, who was our surgeon. He was the first surgeon that we've seen, and he's still our surgeon now. And he was honestly amazing. He just knew straight away.
Yeah. No, and that's really reassuring as well to know that, because there are a lot of people who maybe aren't based in Liverpool, but they do get sent to Alderhay because it is a specialist centre. And if there's one thing they do know about, it is
Hirschsprung's. They definitely know a lot. Definitely, especially Mr. Taylor. To even be able to diagnose without even looking at the bowel or anything, you know, he must be very on the ball with it.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. And there's a lot of people there that, you know, not just know how to diagnose, but also, like you said, the aftercare. You know, that's so, so important to me.
Think,
oh, you're diagnosed with Hirschsprung's. And again, I see this a lot just online, where people say, oh, you're diagnosed with Hirschsprung's, you had your surgery, you're now fixed, in inverted commas.
Yeah, it definitely does not work like that.
No, absolutely not. And they say, oh, well, you've had your surgery, you've had the pull through, and now everything's fixed and you're all okay. It's like, it doesn't work like that. And especially, you know, with having, I think it's five different types of Hirschsprung's, There's so many different types, and even two people with the same long segment won't have the same lives.
Yeah, it's very different, isn't it? Like in terms of how a person can react to it. Someone can have a pull through and remove the stone and be perfectly fine, whereas others can get a pull through and it's still not work for them, and they end up needing to keep the stoma. We actually decided to keep Darla's stoma, for the fact of, I'd say it was the year 2023, the year she was born, she had enterocolitis, which is a common bowel infection that you can get with Hirschsprung's disease. And they actually removed most of her bowel that was affected, because that was what was causing the infection. But in the process of removing that, they've done the pull through, but they've kept the stoma. And then I basically did my own research to decide whether or not we wanted to try the pull through. I decided against. Basically, we found out that if you've got long segments and you've had the pull through, your bowel is very, very limited and small after a pull through if you've had most of your bowel removed. So for Darla to be able to go to the toilet, she could need to go to the toilet up to 20 times a day through to adult life, where she may need to wear nappies into the future in adult life. And I didn't see that as a way of life for a young girl. And I don't think a stoma limited in any way at all, only with a certain few foods that she can eat. Other than that, she's literally the happiest child you will ever see. And a lot of people said, well, are you not worried she'll get bullied? And I said, well, I'd be a lot more worried about having to go to school in a nappy at the age of 12 instead of a stoma bag that can be concealed. No one can see it. You know, it's very hidden and it's safer for her.
Yeah. No, I think...
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Again, when you mention the word stoma to people, especially, you know, if you've
had... It's like jump scare, isn't it? Like, you think, oh, yeah. No, yeah.
Yeah. And when you mention that to people, they go, oh, no, I don't want a stoma. You know, I don't want one of those, you know, and do everything they can to possibly avoid it. But actually, like you said, quality of life is everything.
Yeah, it's over everything. It's such a like, I was also a bit nervous about it. And one of my first thoughts was, what if she gets bullied? And then I thought, well, I'd rather her be alive than any, and I don't care about anything else as long as that she's alive. And she's just started nursery now. Strange to me, because I always wondered what a stoma was.
Yeah.
And like, there's so many people now that I started talking about it on my social media. There's so many people that I actually know in real life who've got one or have got to get one. And it's actually more common than people think. But no one likes to talk about it for the simple fact it's to do with the bowel. It's one of them things that people shy away from.
It's, yeah, it can be one of those taboo subjects.
Yeah.
It kind of, but I think it's becoming a lot more, like you said, with TikTok, with Instagram, you know, people are becoming a lot more open with, yeah, especially stoma bags. As well, I mean, like,
yeah,
Instagram is full of people who've got new stoma bags, want to show off.
There's actually a woman on TikTok called Stoma Babe, and one of my also worries was, do you know who she is?
She's just done the marathon, isn't she?
Yeah, so one of my other worries was, everyone was saying to me, like, what if she can never have kids? And I found Stoma Babe, and she's just had a baby, and wow, she's got a stoma. So I love watching her, because she's stunning as well, and like, you would not know just by looking at her that she's got a stoma. She's honestly stunning, and she's just a lovely person. She raises awareness about it as well, which I think is amazing. And I learned a lot of stuff just from watching her, and like different products that I've never heard of. I think TikTok is amazing for things like this, because you learn a lot. This is where I've learned most of my stuff from, TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, hospitals will give you, yeah, little bits of information. They might, if you're very lucky, they might give you a leaflet. But if you're lucky, but they, you know, and they'll give you all the physical info, you know, how to do the washouts, how to do the this and that, and possibly some products to use. But actually, social media is, again, social media can be a minefield, and there's lots of misinformation on there, and there's lots of, you know, there's lots of everything, the good, the bad, everything. But so long as you follow the right people and...
You learn a lot.
Oh, you do. You really, really do. I mean, I've had TikTok for like a month or something. I've barely started it.
It's such a good platform for spreading information, about, especially about health-related stuff. It sounds mad, but people on TikTok seem to love it. And I think that's because they're very curious. So when I did start I didn't speak about my daughter having stoma for a while on social media, and then I started getting a following. So now I've got 20,000 people. When I am starting to post vlogs and I mention the stoma, people are starting to comment, like, oh, what's that? Like, what happened? And then that's when I ended up telling the story of what had happened. And it got a lot of attention and a lot of people messaging me saying, you know, they feel seen because their baby's got a stoma, and like other medical mums in the same situation that feel like they don't get enough help. And that's another good thing that I love social media for, making other people in my situation feel seen.
Yeah, that is so, so important. I'm glad you brought that up as well, because it can be, especially if you have a child or you have a condition yourself, or child with a condition that is really rare. You know, you type in Hirschsprungs or you mention the word Hirschsprungs just to 99% of people, and they'll go, what? I mean, even healthcare professionals. You know, even you know, the amount of GPs that I've ended up having to explain my condition.
When the baby was poorly last week, we had to get an ambulance. And there was two ambulance men and then a student paramedic with them. Not one of them knew what it was. And he was sitting there on the iPad on the way to the hospital, like, researching. And he's so interesting that he said, you learn something new on this job every single day. He said he'd never heard of that. And I think he'd been 50 years, he'd been doing it for, he was 40 years maybe. He started when he was about 20. He was a quite older man. And he said, all my years, I've never heard of him in life.
That's surprising, especially being so close to older hay.
Yeah.
That's peculiar.
And because I was explaining to him and he said, it sounds familiar. He said, but I've never heard of him before. He said, we've dealt with people with stomas, but never with Hirschsprung's disease.
No, and that's the thing, like when we said about community, because you can feel a bit isolated.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, you have a child with this condition and nobody's really heard of it, and friends have never heard of it. Even wider family have never heard of it. And you feel like you're spending the entire time having to explain. Well, it's this and it's that, and they have a stoma.
Constantly Googling. I feel like I am constantly Googling. If I want to give a something new to eat, I Google. And all I feel like I do is research constantly, because I'm so paranoid to give a something that she's not allowed. And then if we do, I'm like, do we need to go to the hospital? So I'm always like on edge. And then I don't like leaving her with other people in case they give us something that she's not allowed. You're just always on edge, and going new places, like going to the swimming baths, is a big anxiety for me, and I won't really go because I feel like are people going to be looking, like, because she's got a stoma, they didn't feel comfortable with her being in the pool with them. You know, just things like that. But you just never know what people are thinking.
Yeah, I think as well, it is difficult because we always try and second guess what other people are thinking, when chances are most of the time they're just worried about what they're doing.
That's one of my big things. I am a big overthinker.
But that, again, going back to your original point about anxiety and medical anxiety and medical trauma, I think that's, again, speaking to so many people who go through the diagnosis of Hirschsprung's,
we all feel the same.
Stoma. Your story is one that I have heard, you know, before, where people, they do. It's sort of a, and I don't think it's a too strong a word, PTSD.
Definitely. So I actually got diagnosed with PTSD not long after, because I was having nightmares and I couldn't settle, and then eventually, only last year, so she was actually one at this point, it turns into panic disorder. And then my panic disorder turns into agoraphobia. And I didn't leave the house for 2-3 months.
Wow.
I couldn't even walk to the top of the street. And that was solely because I was so worried that either she'd have a bowel obstruction and pass away, or that I'd collapse and pass away. And then who's going to look after her with their stoma? Do you know what I mean? So it was all health related that kicked it off. And it was PTSD, panic disorder, everything. I did eventually get past it. But going to hospitals or when she gets poorly, I will do anything to avoid going to the hospital because it triggers me that bad. I will only go if I know that we really need to.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any help at all. Well, for new mums, I don't think there's any help at all for the anxiety you get after giving birth. But if you're a medical mum and you've just given birth to the baby with a disease like that, there's no support at all, especially like when we were in the hospital. I feel like they should offer a counsellor for if your baby's just nearly lost a life and has had to have all these procedures and stuff and is a newborn baby and you're a new mum. I think there should be a counsellor in the hospital that can go and spend an hour with these mums and speak to them and see how they're feeling and see if they can help in any way. Because putting a mum in that situation after just giving birth and then all of this happening, for one, you can't think straight. For two, you're so scared, you literally can't function. But you're trying. You don't want to sit there crying in a hospital room when the nurses are coming in and out. Because you don't want people to keep saying, are you okay? Are you okay? Because that triggers you worse, yeah?
Yeah.
And I used to go into the bathroom and cry in all today because I used to think, I don't want people coming in and out and asking if I'm okay when she's literally lying on a hospital bed, you know what I mean? Just had surgery. She's a day old. And yeah, it was just horrendous. But I did get over it and now I can just go out freely and stuff like that. And that was because of therapy. I just ended up needing therapy for it.
Yeah. I think you're right, and I advocate for this a lot, where as a mother, I presume you are then thinking, I just want my child to be okay. But actually,
yeah,
who's taking care of you?
That's the thing, yeah. And I feel like this might sound a little bit selfish to say it, but I know that mums will relate to it, don't care saying it. When we was in the hospital and the baby's poorly, everyone coming to see the baby and forgetting about me, even though I'm in a wheelchair, I'm in severe agony and I'm traumatised thinking that I've just nearly lost my newborn baby. And I felt like no one really... But at the same time, I was glad that everyone was cared about the baby. But then at the same time, no one was looking after me. I was looking after myself and I weren't doing a very good job of it because I was, you know, traumatised.
Yeah. And I think I had spoke to somebody about this a couple of weeks ago where they said, you know, in order for me to look after my child, I need to make sure that I'm okay.
100%, yeah.
And then it is that, you know, who's going to be making sure that I'm all right, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's something that is, it's like you said, with no immediate support offered to you. And you've gone through a very hectic, traumatic experience.
Yeah.
And it's then going, right, okay, how do we support everybody? You know, because obviously your child needs lots of support, but you need that support as well.
Exactly. And I do think that they should, even a volunteer, I'd love to do it, but then I feel like when people take it serious, if you just go to the hospital and if a mum with a newborn baby has just had something happen, someone could just go in and say, you know, I'm here if you want to speak for an hour. And if you then if the person who's helping them with the counselling feels like they need further help, then maybe they can refer them for that. And I think that should be done earlier rather than later, and then it wouldn't have ended up like I did with agoraphobia. If I would have got the help that I needed at the time, the stuff that happened to me a year later wouldn't have happened because I would have been resolving them issues already instead of letting them brew up.
Yeah.
And it all hit me at once.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you'd be a perfect person to go along.
I'm a good talker.
But you've been through it. You know, you can
relate.
Again, it's one thing hearing it from somebody who, you know, might be qualified and might be able to talk through various symptoms and whatever that you're experiencing. But it's entirely different when you talk to somebody who has been through something similar.
Yeah.
Because they know, and you can't replicate that.
No, definitely not.
You can't replicate the all of the feelings. It's like we said before, all of the feelings that you went through, some of which obviously you'd blocked off and then come back in, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what it does. That's why now if I'm upset about something, I'll let myself feel it in that moment instead of it coming back round and biting me, because when it comes back round again, it's doubled up because you've left it for that long. And it's strange because I know if I would have asked for help at that time, I wouldn't have the anxiety that I've got now, which is rootless.
Yeah, but then the flip side is that you're going through anything and everything and worrying entirely about your child.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably didn't have, as you said, you know, had everything going on, a very blurry memory of everything.
Yeah.
Probably then didn't think, oh, actually, maybe I need to possibly have some help, because you're not thinking straight at that time. So it's impossible for you then to go, oh, actually, I might need to do this, that, the other. That's where it's kind of, you need that other person, don't you? I guess someone else to kind of get.
Yeah, definitely. And especially when you get discharged, that's a whole other ball game, getting discharged and like sent home with all this information and all these medical equipment. And I remember getting home and I was just like, oh my God, like there's no one here to help me now. There's no nurses. I need to be on the ball. Yeah. And I remember the first few nights I struggled a lot because the bag kept leaking and I couldn't understand why. And it was because I was so tired. I weren't like putting the stickers around the bag and it was just exploding everywhere. And we were going through clothes. Like there was no tomorrow blankets. It was a nightmare. Obviously, I'm like a pro now. Like I could do it with my eyes closed and have no issues. But at that time, I remember the cards were like a week straight because I kept thinking, like, am I doing it wrong? Am I hurting her? But obviously it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. But I was so convinced that I was like hurting her.
Yeah, but it's interesting you said that you've become, you know, it's just second nature to you now. It's amazing that you've become qualified in something that you haven't known for many, many years, and then suddenly, because you effectively you have to.
Yeah, it's like you've got no choice, which is actually a good thing because it shows how resilient mums are, that if you're given something and you've never done it before and you know you've got to do that for your child, you just do it.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Absolutely. There was one other part that you mentioned as well, when it was just before the midwife came round, and you knew something was up.
Yeah.
Even though everything had been ticked off and you'd been sent home and all of this stuff. And there's one thing I'll always believe in, advocate for, having spoken to
mother's intuition.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. But mother's intuition, if I can say it properly, is just something that I can't explain. I don't know if anybody else can explain it better than I can, but you know, it's something that I presume you just feel wrong.
You get like it's like you get like an instinct in your body. So obviously, my eldest daughter, she's been to all today once in her life, and that was because she's had an abscess. She's never ill. She's never had any health problems. So for all I knew, that was normal, but it was just, I had this thing in the back of my brain and it was like a voice, and it was just saying, something's wrong, something's wrong. But then there's another voice trying to convince myself, no, you're being paranoid, now you're being paranoid. But I knew for the simple fact she weren't even waking up for a bottle. She had slept all night without a bottle, and I'm like, that's not normal. Like, surely she would wake up for a bottle now. But I feel like, obviously, when you have a baby, you're like intertwined with this baby anyway. You've just been inside you for 9 months. Like, you know, it's so hard to explain, but you just know. Like, every time I've had a feeling about something to do with my kids, I've never been wrong.
Yes. I think
every time she's been poorly since she's had the stoma, everyone's like, oh, she might not be that bad. And every time we've ended up in hospital, like I've said we would, and we've ended up staying in for a week at a time because I knew. And I am not on the ball with it now. I can notice 3 days before she actually gets poorly that she's going to be poorly. Just by how she acts and certain little things she does.
Wow. I mean, that goes far and beyond mother's instinct. That's kind of telepathy stuff.
Yeah, I think I am a little bit telepathic.
But it's something that I will always advocate for. You know, it happened to me 30 odd years ago, you know, and if my mum hadn't had brilliant mother's instinct, then I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So it's something that you can't explain, or certainly I can't, but it is that feeling of you just know something wrong. And it's interesting you said, you know, every time I just know, and
yeah,
every time I've been right.
And that's why when you do go to the hospital now, and obviously most of the doctors there do know Darla and know about Darla's situation, but like when we get new doctors, or like new nurses, when we go to A&E, I say to them, I know there's something wrong. And they say, we always trust mother's intuition, especially if she's got a medical background. And the mum says something's wrong. She said, we don't even really listen to other doctors. We are listening to the mum. And if the mum says there's something wrong, 9 times out of 10, there's something wrong. And every time I've said it, there was something wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I'd probably go even further and probably say 99 times out of 100.
Yeah, honestly, every single time. I remember this when she did have to get a bowel removed the second time they did the pull through. That was the second operation. After that operation, she was acting strange, and I said to them, there's something wrong with her. And I shouted all the nurses in, and 2 minutes later she went like floppy, and turns out she had sepsis and needed a blood transfusion. But it was just off me looking at her off the off chance and noticed that something was wrong, and it was because she was staring into space, and I shouted all the nurses in and I said, something's wrong with her. And he said, no, I think she's just, you know, got swollen after surgery. And I said, there's something wrong. And 2 minutes later, she was like unresponsive, but all the sats were normal. It was strange, but she was like unresponsive. And went grey, and she needs the blood transfusion. And it was like, I just knew.
Wow. So she's gone through enterocolitis and sepsis. So two of like the main...
She's had sepsis about 2-3 times now, yeah.
Wow.
I think they said once she gets sepsis, she can be more prone to get it again. Especially off enterocolitis. So now every time we go in, she gets sepsis queried because she's had it too many times.
Yeah. No, that makes sense that you are going to be more prone to it,
yeah,
than previous. But yeah, I mean, so she has had all of the, I guess, more well-known associated conditions with Hirschsprung's. So it's just bad luck that you've ended up catching them all, I guess.
I know. Terrible.
That is. And as we've just sort of got 5 or 10 minutes here, in terms of the future for Darla,
mm-hmm.
I know you mentioned she has stoma and will keep that stoma.
Yeah.
What do you see her sort of future looking like medically and non-medically?
So medically, I have basically said if when she gets older, she decides she wants to do the reversal, she can do that. Completely, she can do that. And I will help her and whatever, but I want her to be able to decide that on her own with knowing the pros and the cons of it. I don't want to put her through it now and put her in a worse situation than she's already been in. She's been through a lot. I don't want to put her through anything else. So if when she gets older and she decides she wants to do it, that's perfectly fine. And then if she decides she wants to put back in, that's fine. She can do all that. But non-medically, I haven't even thought that far ahead. I can't even think about next week yet. I'm moving at like 100 miles an hour. I'm trying to get through the day. Never mind thinking about the future. But I just know she's just like the funniest kid ever. So a comedian, probably. I could just imagine as a weird comedian. But I want to raise awareness about what she's got, and like I want it to be known as like this resilient kid who's been through the worst stuff in the world and has come out 10 times better, for people who were scared, who were in this situation, to look up to someone and see she's been through it and she's fine. Like I do with that stoma babe on TikTok.
Yes.
That I look up to her like that. So I do want to raise awareness and help other people in the same situation.
Yeah.
Well, because of her.
You do a fantastic job of that. I mean, it's how I came across you in the first sense at TikTok. I think you do a great job in raising awareness. Because again, as we said, it's not something that's talked about as much.
No, definitely not.
And it's difficult for me to say whether it is talked about more or it isn't, because I'm in that bubble every day. So, and I guess you're sort of in that bubble as well. So, and where we just sort of come across it because it's what we search for, it's who we follow, and all of that stuff. But it is about sort of raising that awareness and also not being afraid of it. I think, as we said before, with stomas, people can kind of go, "Oh, stoma, don't."
Yeah, they don't want to talk about it, or they think it's embarrassing, or because it's anything to do with bodily fluids, people are so weirded out by, and it's like, come on, we all have bodily fluids. How do you think you survive? If I'm telling you that if my daughter couldn't go to the toilet, she would have lost her life. How are people not understanding how important bodily fluids are? Like, it's a part of the body's system of like regulating and functioning. You know what I mean? Exactly. But I think people just shy away from it, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. But then, the more we talk about it, the more normal it becomes.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and also it might save a life. You know, people might be scrolling across and going, "Oh, actually, this person said this, and oh, I have that." And
exactly. Or like someone seen my video and their baby had just been born and they're vomiting green stuff. And they did believe the doctors when they said that it's fluids from the womb.
Yeah.
But then they seen my video and tested against that, and it was right. But, you know, like, it could save a baby's life.
Yeah, you've already saved a life, you know. Just, and it sounds silly to go, "Oh, well, I did a TikTok and saved a life," but you do.
You genuinely can, yeah. And that's why I take TikTok so serious now. I never used to take it serious. I used to just think it was just like, you know, a little app. And now I've got 20,000 followers on there, and I've met some amazing people. I've got some amazing opportunities, and like things like this, I would never ever have done. But it all this stems from what happened to her when she was born, because it's given me the confidence to do everything that I do now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a fantastic sentiment to finish on, because you said, you know, through adversity has come all of this strength that you didn't know you had, and all of this confidence and all of these things. You know, you wouldn't have thought, you know, a few years ago you'd be an expert at stoma changing and expert Hirschsprungs and all of these things that you've acquired over the last few years. Has been absolutely amazing, and all power to you for that. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
And just as we finish, where can people find you online?
So I don't really use Instagram. I only use TikTok, and my TikTok name is Libby Gailmum. No, that's what everyone calls me. But I think my TikTok name is actually just L Darcy, which is Libby's my name, and then Darcy is my eldest daughter. I made TikTok I got like 8 years ago, maybe. But my TikTok name is Libby Gailmour.
Fantastic. Well, go and have a follow if you want to see lots of sort of, there's some really good sort of Hirschsprungs. Your story is on there as well. I think it's just a five minute story on there. But that's really, really good. So thank you so, so much for coming on. It has been a pleasure to chat to you.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.